okay, after the whole ice thing went down, I went on Chapo. Right after that, just happened. This all happened to happen, like, right before I was going on tour, right? So I'm on tour, I get a phone call from an agent who saw the whole thing go down.
Like a business agent? Like somebody?
Like a representation for, like, you know, actors, comedians, okay, and shit like that. He represents a bunch of other comics. Came by pretty legit. I looked him up. And he said that he had been listening to the show, and he heard my name around and stuff, and he's like, one of his clients turned him on to Chapo, and okay. Oh my god, this guy has been on my radar, whatever's on Chapo, right? So, we have this long conversation, because where you're at right now, I think, in the entertainment industry, with so much being DIY, and so many of us turning to, like, podcasting and the internet and shit, is, we're not really in a situation where, like, you meet a booking agent, and they go, I'm going to make you a star. And oh, my God.
And on the casting couch, kid. Your name in lights.
Yeah. Or at least if you're smart, you shouldn't look at it that way.
Sure.
You shouldn't think about it as, like, making it, you know? It's very quid pro quo. You kind of sit down and go, okay, what can I do for you? What can you do for me? We had a long conversation, and we kind of came to this conclusion of, like, all right, if I can use some of his resources to get my story into some bigger platforms, then it might blow up me to the point where he can then start, like, you know, booking tours for my podcast and shit like that.
Oh, sweet,
and then
yeah.
It's all very, like, okay, we can both see how we're both getting something out of that, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we sat around, we formulated a, like, a little press kit, a little pitch, a little plan on, like, you know, he knows, like, Marin's people, and he was, like, able to get it to Marin, and, you know, I think he never responded, but I think Marin's kind of, I mean, he's a lib, obviously.
Yeah. I'm friends with him.
Better than Rogan, though.
Right.
Rogan's,
a,
yeah,
Rogan's a nothing. He's like a blank slate.
It's also entirely likely that he, you know, I don't know, he gets pitched a million things a day. For whatever reason, we didn't get Marin, right? And then I ask him about Rogan, because he comes up, and we're both like, this would be, like, perfect for his audience, because they're a lot. Well, there's like 16 million people listen to that show, right? So there's,
God,
like,
yeah, that's so bad.
There's a big swath of people, but to my experience, it's a lot of like ideology less people.
Sure.
Like, they're people that find shit interesting,
yeah,
and happen to listen to that show because it just kind of, that show is kind of neutral. Although because it's neutral, it's getting hijacked by, you know, he's a rich guy, so he hangs out with all these Jordan Peterson types.
That's
and shit like
what
that.
Happens.
Yeah.
When you don't have politics.
I'm worried about the people that listen to that show and think that Joe Rogan is just, like, the smartest guy.
Yeah. Does anybody believe that?
No. He's absolutely a dumb guy's smart guy.
I was saying earlier, he's like the dumb bro version of Russell Brand.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what he is. He's a guy that dumb guys think is really smart because he's the smartest version of them. And the only thing that is Rogan, I think, really has going for him is that on some level, he's neutral and curious,
yeah,
but that has faults, because I mean, you see how this happens. He has, like, a bunch of right-wing dark intellectual web guys on his show all the time, and then every once in a while somebody like a Jimmy Dore and Abby Martin gets in there, right?
But that's as far as it goes. He would never have, like, Richard Wolff or David Harvey.
He would never have
like
a Sam Cedar on.
So maybe not, you know, and I don't think it's he's against any of these things. I think that there's just, like, reasons that it doesn't happen to come up and they don't end up in his circles, etc. So I came up with this idea of, like, all right, well, I know a bunch of comics that happen to hang out in that circle. So, you know, this guy goes, well, the other thing about Rogan is that he's his own operation. So this powerful Hollywood agent guy is like, I have no idea how to get to him. No one does. And I go, well, my friend Brendan Walsh hangs out and does DMT with him and shit. And I just know him because we did stand up in the same places, like, 10 years ago in Austin or whatever. I go, oh my God, I got a little opportunity here, you know? So I hit up Brendan, and he knows, like, Duncan Trussell also, and, you know, I've got this kind of little stepping stone, and I go, like, can you forward him this pitch that I made and, like, tell him my story or whatever?
This was after the DHS shit.
So. Yeah, yeah.
And he's got, like, a vaguely libertarian bent, too, so you'd think he'd want to bite on that, right? Like, because he's all freedom and weed and
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. That's why I was like, this would be perfect for his show, because I can get him to buy into it, and I can get his audience to buy into it, because they're all into, like, oh, my God, the police state and all this shit, right? That's the common ground we have. And then I was thinking, I could do this Trojan horse thing. Once I tell the story, then I can extrapolate and explain all the more leftist leanings to the stuff. I can get in the fucking Chapo guys, all of us, the whole, this world that's, you know, somewhat blocked out of there, just
break us into his, like, 6 million YouTube views on every episode and shit.
And
that
just balance
so
out some of the right wing shit he's doing on there, right? Yeah, yeah. That could, like, work. And it all comes together. He says he's down to have me on. And so then I asked Brendan, because I have to talk through Brendan. Like, he won't, I don't have a direct line with him, but he's like, talking to Brendan.
He's like Bill Murray, who only takes shit by like landline. You have to like leave him like an actual fucking like answering machine message to get in touch with him.
You have
sort of
to
thing.
Be on DMT at the same time as him.
You have to
and
yeah.
have your elves talk to his elves. That's how he books.
Have my elves talk to your elves.
He sneaks up behind you, gives you a noogie, and says you're going to be on my podcast, and no one will ever believe it.
So I ask him like, you know, hey, oh, great, like when should we do this? And he goes, oh, just whenever you're in town. And like, I'm like, what do you, I'm a poor person. I'm not just in LA sometimes. Like that's a thing that's in my life.
Yeah. Might be a good investment. To,
yeah. $300 plane ticket just to go out. Yeah.
Well, so that's what I did. Right.
All right.
I went to LA because I was going to have a meeting with this fucking agent. And, you know, I go out there periodically anyway to do like stand up and shit. Just to, you just do that. Sometimes you have to go test the waters, show your face. Part of the job, right? It's like, okay, all great. I'll make that my fucking trip this year to LA. I go out there, I hang out for a week. I'm like on shows in the same clubs as him, like, but I can't get into the green room. He'll be like 20 feet away from me, and the green room's, oh, they don't let anyone in, you know?
Does he do stand up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what he made his bones on that shit, actually.
Yeah, that's his thing.
He's in that world.
And he, because he's got this crazy cult following, he sells out, you know, clubs every night and shit. It's well, that's a weird thing about stand-up. It's mostly, well, okay. He's all over the place, but sometimes fine. It is. Like,
don't talk too much shit on him, because you might still end up making it on his show.
You know what? Maybe I'll get his attention if I talk enough shit on him.
Ah,
I don't know.
Go, there you go.
It's in the vein of Dane Cook, but just a little bit more alt, I think.
Yeah, no, it's sounds smarter than Dane Cook.
So bad.
Like, I don't...
But it's
like, a funny, like, it's a trope among, like, dirtbag leftists to make fun of him because he's a hilarious person. But honestly, as a comic, I watch him and I go, these are good bits. Like, I see how he wrote that. And he's kind of, he's maybe a little bit on that, like, he's an old guy that maybe probably likes Bill Hicks, like, truth tellery types or whatever that a little bit corny for my generation. But I mean, he's not a bad comic.
Neither is Dane Cook.
Fair enough. Yeah.
He's selling shit out, right? Do you have a Joe Rogan impression you could do?
It's kind of
hard. He's like
we were trying before. Like, we wanted to like cold open with some Joe Rogan shit, like, and like we just couldn't nail it.
Boom, we're live. Hey dudes, welcome to the Antifada Experience. I'm Joe Rogan.
That's not what he sounds like.
I know. Well, we can't it's like nail a Michael Brooks impression. You know, it's not like literally a good impression, but it's like spiritually a good impression. You know, like you have his vibe.
Boom, we're live. This is the Antifada with Joe Rogan, dude. Hey, we're here with Jake Flores. What's up, man?
Nah, see, the thing you're getting wrong here, in essence, is that, so he on stage, he's like an MMA guy. He's like gripping the mic real hard, and he's like, blah, blah, and then this happens. Blah. But the thing is, when he's doing his smart guy podcast,
he's so chill.
He's very...
Well, that's the incredible thing. Like, is he's got that gravitas about him, because he's this big, burly, bald dude, you know, with muscles.
Yeah.
And all he needs to do is kind of, whether he's wearing his baseball cap or not, just like hunch forward and like stare, and he's got like auto gravitas, you know. And he doesn't
like
say smart things. He's
late
like
night dorm room smoking weed gravitas.
Oh
yeah,
big time.
And that's like, what I think what all him and Trussell and those guys are going for with their show. Like, it's deliberate. They're like, these conversations are supposed to be those conversations you have on mushrooms, but it's because they believe that those conversations are very good conversations.
Oh, no.
And not something that if you recorded and then listened to afterwards, you'd be like, what the fuck are we talking about?
I mean, I have a lot of experience doing drugs for stories, but like, I don't write them when I'm still on drugs. You know, you kind of have to synthesize all the dumb stuff that you thought and turn it into something good for
Jamie,
it to be good.
You wouldn't understand unless you take 500 milligrams of THC and then think about if the pyramids were Wi-Fi receptors or not.
Fair enough. I stand corrected.
And read two articles about it and then just are totally convinced that it's true because you want it to be.
Oh my God. Did he really say that?
Yeah, he's one of these anti-diluvian, like, civilization is actually 4 million years old.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
They're
really
warning us about a comet.
I just lost any respect for him that I had, which wasn't that much to begin with.
Well, babe, you and me just yesterday, and, well, I'm speaking for myself, maybe for you too, but I sat down and watched an entire Joe Rogan Experience for the first time.
We both
all
did.
2 hours and 37 fucking minutes of experience. It was one of the longer experiences I've had. And so I kind of got to, like, you get into this sort of, like, I don't know, it's almost like meditative. He's always talking about enlightenment and, like, meditative stuff. He kind of brings you into that because, yeah, it's like you've just taken some, like, a giant fucking bong rip out of some, like,
it made,
you know,
it gave me a contact high for sure.
Yeah,
he's definitely creating white noise on some level. I know a lot of people that sleep, they fall asleep listening to it. It makes sense.
With six million views on that Elon Musk shit, I don't think the retention rate made it much past like an hour.
Is
or something
it really
like that.
Boring?
You know
it's
what
really
it is,
boring.
Really it's inane. Like when we go to sleep to Ancient Aliens.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, all this dumb stuff just, like, washes over you and, like, soothes you to sleep.
There's
nice.
That, there's that great part we were watching, babe, where he's like, what, you know, what about if, you know, you had a road, but you made it out of magnets? And Elon Musk is like, no, you can't do that. And he's like, no, but just imagine with the magnets, like, you could be going really fucking crazy fast, dude. And Elon's like, it would be very dangerous. You would have people and cars exploding everywhere. And he's like, oh, well, you're the smart dude. I just thought it'd be really cool to have a bunch of magnets. And that was like 10 minutes of conversation.
Oh, my God. I will say he's like, I feel like we should probably save this for later in the show.
No, I know.
He's,
I just like, wanted to
kind of a good interviewer. Like, he has the emotional intelligence to know how to get stuff out of people.
He does.
And
yeah,
like, he tried for what, like 45 minutes before he got Elon Musk to, like, laugh and smile.
37 minutes.
Yeah.
Actually.
But then after that, he, like, knew what to keep on hitting on to get him to say personal shit.
Well, he also is a good interview because he is genuinely pretty objective, which is why he has his platform is something that can be used for good. And just, it is, I wasn't able to get on it because this whole thing hung on the whims of this guy who's just probably in a large house somewhere, you know, doing sword hits and shit. And
of DMT.
Yeah.
Just dipping entire fucking samurai blade in a big bag of DMT. And smoking the
and
shit.
Meanwhile, there's a phone ringing in the background of this scene, and it's me going, I'm in town. And then he just forgot about
he
it.
He just blew you off?
So the thing is, what happened is I was kind of, he's this white whale. I was around LA searching for him for a week. I just kept running into, like, headshots of him in comedy clubs, just going, where are you?
Did you have his number?
No, it's all talking through a third party because he keeps it that way because there's so many people after this
dude. Your agent is not helping you very much.
He's not my agent. This was all to try to get this agent to, like, we were going to ink a deal if we both could.
It
benefit
steps,
off of him, right?
Okay.
So I didn't need it. But also, the agent doesn't have any access to him. No one has any access to him. He's a fucking crazy, rich, like, hard-to-get-to guy, right?
I imagine you're in a New Age spa just checking every isolation tank. sorry.
Yeah.
He does have an isolation tank in his studio, which is pretty impressive, I gotta say. He was trying to get Elon Musk, like, several times he said to Musk, he's like, you should really try the isolation, dude. Like it'll really fucking calm you down. It's like enlightenment, man. Your brain will open right up, dude. I think we were talking about his choice of programming, right? It seems like he's this kind of neutral, like, sort of arbiter of things, and he does, like Jamie says.
Yeah, like the New Yorker Festival.
Yeah, sure, right. Or
like
the Ozzy Fest.
No, Ozzy Fest is very not neutral, and it's very obvious, but okay.
Well, but that's where I think that behind there's something happening behind the scenes, because as the left has more and more public intellectuals, and as, like, we have more and more, you know, not power per se, but more and more sway, like, intellectually, right?
We have
a platform, right? You would think that, like, somewhere along the way, that would have been opened up to him beyond, like, an idiot like Jimmy Dore, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there must be some block that he has against that, perhaps as a rich man. I don't know.
There's a couple of reasons there. One of them is that the culture of the entertainment industry is very liberal, obviously, but in the way that excludes leftism. And then you also, in a lot of ways, kind of excludes like conservatives, but honestly, they just have another branch of the entertainment industry. But like, you know, if you talk to someone like James Adomian about their experience trying to work in this industry, you know, he has all these stories about, you know, he's Armenian, and he's had stories about being sort of cut out of shows that were political shows when he brings up like the Armenian genocide. Right. And you think, you don't think it's there, but these companies are all owned by people that, you know, have interests that would affect.
Are you saying that Turks fair. Control the media?
Erdogan, if you're listening, we have a great agent. His name is Jay Flores, and we'd love to come to Istanbul for a live show.
I can get
you want.
Joe Rogan. He can MMA fight people out there for you. It's not just that like the left is sort of unwelcome within the paradigm of the entertainment industry. It's that there's sort of a whittling down of yourself that you have to do to keep rising up the ranks in the entertainment industry. And that it's like unconscious to people, I think, because so much of what you're doing as a person who makes like anything, but the best way I've always understood this as a comic, the really easy way to illustrate the mechanism is like, I write jokes, right? And then I go out in front of an audience and I test them against the audience. And then the audience gives me feedback, and from there, I have to make a decision to change something about it, whether I thought I did something wrong or I wasn't getting my point across. But a lot of times you get the thing backwards, and the reward system you get is what is being, you know, clapped at, laughed at, what are you being given more money for, et cetera.
Right, right,
and
right,
those mm-hmm. things, because of all these, you know, external forces, tend to reward actors and comedians that are rising through the ranks for subscribing to liberalism as sure. we have it. So it's like they don't even know they're doing
it. It's sort of like the lawyer who has all these dreams of like working for the ACLU or being like a National Lawyers Guild type lawyer, but they're in a ton of debt and they have to like get a job, and they end up falling into like corporate finance, and now they're making like good money, and then 30 years down the line they're like, oh man, I guess I changed, you know, I made a lot of money, but like the legal
but that's
world kind of brought me in.
Usually I think 30 years down the line, they usually don't say, oh my God, I changed. Mm, I think right. what they do is they go, I meant to do this all along,
yeah.
because this is the thing that people are telling them they're smart for, they're
right,
good
right,
for.
Right,
so
yeah.
they go, it's like a confirmation bias thing.
That's fair. Yeah. Let's start
yeah.
ourselves a motherfucking
yeah.
show.
All right.
Jamie just did some poppers, so I think we're
oh,
ready to go.
Yeah.
All right.
take the poppers, actually.
All right, hold your horses. Hold your horses.
Right, those are Fire Island poppers.
We have
poppers.
To get through
those
the
are
intro, all right? I'll give them to you in a second.
All right, I appreciate
I've
it.
I've been
meaning
to talk to you about your poppers problem, babe.
Listen, if Virgil's allowed to do that many whippets, I'm allowed to do this many poppers. What's good for
Don't
the goose is good
Virgil.
For the gander.
Seriously. He has a different constitution than you and I think.
Well, I've seen Virgil's apartment. You should model yourself after Virgil, Texas.
Are you saying perhaps I know how to put furniture together? Or at least I'd buy it and don't keep it unmade for 6 months?
That was kind of a hot couch right? guy apartment.
That's what I said when we heard that on Chapo. Yeah. And I was like,
glass houses, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Hot couches, man.
People with hot couches shouldn't throw DVD menus.
You wouldn't expect Virgil to be the hot couch guy.
No.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, it's because he wears the suits and stuff.
Right,
no,
that's how
he
gets
he
you.
Looks- So, our old pal Elon Musk is at it again. Motherfucking flat. That's right, folks. for those who may be listening for the first time, we do like to check in occasionally with the misadventures of everyone's favorite emotional Twitter-loving capitalist.
Yeah, I mean, this is we put the marker down this week in Musk several episodes ago, and we haven't really kept it up weekly. But you know what? We cannot let these capitalist scum dominate our entire mm-hmm. podcast. But mm-hmm. when they do make news again, we can touch on it.
He is the most entertaining one.
Yeah, that's why people yeah. fuck with him.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
Like, we had on our friend Neural a few episodes ago, and he did kind of this, like, contrarian defense of Elon Musk.
Whoa.
Where he was like, yeah, he was like, you know, everyone loves to shit on Elon Musk, but like, he's actually out there making things, and he's doing what capitalists are supposed to, and he's innovating, and he's like gonna fix the environment with electric cars and shit. And like, for a second, I was kind of like, oh, you know, maybe you're right. People just drag on him because he's like available and he clearly cares a lot what people think of him. But like, I'm fine with that.
No, he's terrible and he's hilarious, I think.
Yeah.
He's both those things, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the argument there, the devil's advocate argument your friend might have been making is like, oh, he's... People love making fun of him so much that they're not seeing like the forest for the trees, but it's a very stupid forest. He sucks. He's
that
so
is,
fun.
That is generally Neural's thing. He is the spicy devil's advocate.
That's right. That's a real inside joke, but you are correct. Yeah, so like the argument that Nero was making, which we were kind of unprepared for, but it wasn't like the worst argument in the world, was that if you look at, say, you know, like finance capitalists and, you know, say the Koch brothers or, you know, these folks, that Elon Musk's at least out there doing stuff. You know, he's fucking flying rockets
into space. He's
making things. He's one of these old kind of like...
Digging
holes in the ground. He's like this boring company, you know. He's got this real vision. And he's got this real sense of, I kind of like this, like, I don't know, sort of futuristic utopian attitude towards spending his own money on random shit. Vision.
He's got vision, folks.
Which is actually something the left does lack. But that said, we saw some of that vision on a very visionary show this week with the amazing Joe Rogan, where, what did he do again, Elon Musk?
He smoked weed.
Yeah, he smoked
weed. He talked about his feelings.
Yeah.
He had a very flat, unnerving affect. Like, which thing are you referring to?
The smoking weed thing that blew up the internet.
He did not even inhale. Okay, so we watched the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, see, listen, just so before Jamie goes on, folks, we watched 2 hours and 42 minutes of the Joe Rogan Experience, so you did not have to. Jamie and I suffered through this last night, all right?
We're basically troops, all
right?
We
are troops.
You're welcome for our service.
I respect you. You should get half off at, like, the buffet.
I think so. I think that we should.
People should give up their seats to us when we're on the airplane, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Or on SpaceX, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
These people want to kneel at the anthem while y'all are out there. Risking it all for them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
No respect.
I think after like an hour and a half, I realized how much we were risking.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It was almost death by boredom. But go on, babe. You were saying.
Well, I mean, parts of it were actually very enthralling. Like, it was all quite bad and embarrassing. But parts of it were, I was like, all right, I get why people are sucked into this show. But there were so many things. Where do I begin? We pulled out some of the highlights, I guess.
You sound so excited about this whole thing.
Yeah.
So one of the things that struck me right off the bat is that Elon Musk is wearing this black T-shirt, and it says in kind of this, you know, like not graffiti, but like kind of punk rock looking like spray paint letters, Occupy. And it takes you a while as he moves around on the Joe Rogan show with a camera angle to see that it says Occupy Mars, you know, with a little symbol of Mars next to it. And obviously, this guy's a fucking billionaire. So immediately, having been involved in Occupy, as I'm sure many of you have, and it being a generally anti-capitalist movement, you know, whatever it was, for the time that it was, you know, I was very much offended by this. You know, he's wearing a fucking Occupy shirt.
Yeah, he's appropriating our culture.
He's appropriating our culture.
That bastard.
That South African fuck. But then I started thinking, too, it's like when it pans back, you see it says Occupy Mars on it. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why is it that all these, like, fanboys online, why is it that 5.25 million people watched 2 hours and change of fucking Elon Musk
Musk's
on the Joe
cucks,
Rogan show?
As I like to refer to them.
Yes. Why are there, how many Twitter followers does he have?
Too many.
Like, millions upon millions of Musk's cucks out there. And I'm trying to kind of figure it out through this T-shirt. And what I realize is that it seems like Musk sees himself as, and the things that he does as, a sort of movement on par with Occupy, right? This sort of techno-futuristic solving all the world's problems. Occupying Mars, for example, which would be a huge endeavor with all these resources, private and public or whatever. Like, he actually sees that as on par with a people's movement against, you know, the powers of banks and the powers of capital. So in a sense, I think the Occupy Mars shirt comes off as a little offensive at first. Oh, he's appropriating, you know, our culture.
My culture's not your prom dress.
Right, exactly.
It's a culture, not a costume.
Right. But I think it actually does show something about this sort of like Elon Musk mindset, and then also what his fanboys think about that.
He appeals to people, I think, for a reason that they have a lack of ideology. And I think that's kind of a just sickness, like a byproduct of everything that's happened that's led us up to this cultural moment or whatever. But
yeah, like technocratic vision is the ideology of fools, right? It's
yeah.
like a stand-in.
But also, I mean, I was reading like an interview with Donald Glover a while back, who is arguably a pretty intelligent, creative person. Seems like a bit of a wacko, and there might be a lot going on there too. You know, maybe an eccentric creative type or whatever. But, you know, like, this is like 6 months ago or a year ago or something when, like, Atlanta came out, and it was either the first or second season they were writing about. And that, you know, the character in Atlanta talks about Marxism, and then
really,
he mentions it a few times. And they talk about
never seen it.
You know, there's like jokes about you're Malcolm, I'm Martin, or I think that backwards or whatever. But there seems to be something going on there. And then you read this interview with Donald Glover, and they ask him like, you know, who do you admire? And he says he admires Elon Musk. And I think this was shortly before a lot of people started figuring out he was horrible, thanks to people like us, I think, on some level.
I hope so, yeah.
Thanks to Twitter or whatever.
And himself and that pedo accusation of that diving hero. But yeah.
But being from a place like Texas, I mean, like, you know, I talk to leftists in this city and around the country, and everyone has a different story. Some people read Diaper Babies. Some people went to college and became radicalized or whatever. For me, this stuff is... it's not a given. I mean, I come from a place where it's very I don't know, the default. It's very obvious. Like, oh yeah, of course, a millionaire would be the person to fix society because that's how society works. That person has the most power. And I think these people, I mean, it's hilarious. They're kind of dumb for worshiping this guy and thinking that's what would save the world at this point. But I think it's also a product of their you know, their situation, their lack of culture and education around it.
Is that also... Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, and, like, we were talking about this before, like, talking to, like, Silicon Valley technocrats. Like, most of them are pretty interesting. Like, they know about interesting things that maybe we don't know a lot about but think are cool, like science and technology and engineering. They probably have, like, fairly liberal politics if you, like, meet someone at a bar in San Francisco or whatever. And, like, it's only when you get to a deeper level of discussion of, like, ideas and worldview and ideology that we diverge from them. So, like... I get it why they have, like, a certain basic appeal to, like, the average human being.
Yeah. And that's, like, often, like, the gap is, like, the if you're talking to a neoliberal person or somebody who believes in the free market or whatever, it's, like, you'll ask them, you know, what do you think are the goals of utopian society? And on some level, they're the same thing. And then when you go, how do you get there? That's when it all starts to come apart.
Yeah. And also, how does not only how do you get there, but how is that managed? And I think that a lot of the Elon Musk fanboys and girls out there have this sense that, you know, there's no other way that these things can happen except the smartest and the, you know, most technically savvy people, right? The engineers of the world could possibly be able to figure out a way to solve society's problems.
I noticed that there is a correlation between the fandom of Elon Musk picking up around the same time that the fandom of NASA dropped off.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember, like, maybe 5 years ago, NASA was, like, huge on Reddit. People shared all of NASA's social media and stuff.
Really?
But when SpaceX came in actually launching rockets and, like, promising all this nonsense, talking about mining asteroids, and Bezos is doing the same thing, it basically acquired that hope for the future that people have had about NASA since the space race.
Yeah, and I think there's something essential about space and technology that brings out utopian visions in people. You know, whether that's Star Trek or whether that is the, you know, the NASA program from the 60s until up until recently. And I think Musk really does fill this void that exists where the left, we on the left here, do not have these grand utopian visions, right? We're not saying, oh, let's go to Mars. More often we're attacking one another on Twitter. So I think, you know, Elon Musk and those folks kind of fill the vacuum that's left because we haven't really been creating very persuasive or utopian or beautiful visions.
Well,
for the future.
Speak for yourself. I mean, we just had a whole episode with Comrade Communicator
about nuclear
fucking space communism and how that's going to happen. But it is also, like, at the same time, very catastrophic if you don't believe in the space comrades, which I think most people don't. But like, I do think there's something to that. Like, we watched Star Trek last night, which I had no idea until recently that Star Trek was a commie show, or I would have watched it much, much sooner. But like, we like to joke about like fully automated gay space luxury communism, but like, it's not entirely a joke. Like, we do need a utopian vision of the future, because like, if you talk to a fucking Elon Musk type, he'll give you his utopian vision of the future, and it sounds great. If you talk to a leftist, or like, you know, certain kinds of leftists, like, you know, the kind that we are, probably, and you ask about the future, we'll tell you, like, you know, it's pretty uncertain right now. It's pretty hard to tell. And like, what we need to do in order to make a good future is almost inconceivably difficult, but you should do it anyway, because it's the right thing to do. But it's also really complicated, and there are a lot of different things to consider. Like, that's not as appealing a vision. So like, I like what Ash Sarkar said, actually, our girl Ash Sarkar, about why she calls herself a communist.
Literally a communist.
She's literally a communist, because we need to bring back some kind of utopian vision. And that doesn't mean that we don't do practical shit in the here and now to build to it. But like, if you're shooting for a utopian horizon, maybe you'll actually get something good.
Well, as Elon Musk might say, shoot for the moon and you'll land among the stars.
Exactly. You know, he's got some stuff to contribute, I would say.
I do, maybe it's a different circle I run in, but I kind of think that a lot of leftists get accused of being too utopian and not like pragmatic or whatever. It's just that the utopia you're fighting for is not a bunch of spaceships and shit. It's there not being so many police, or maybe not any at all, definitely in the way they exist right now.
I mean, we're going to get accused of being utopian no matter what we say or what we do, so we might as well shoot for something really fucking good.
Well, well, here's the exact problem, is that Elon Musk's utopia and his fans' utopia is based on this bizarre sort of
I guess optimism was more of a better word for what I was saying before, right? Because, like, I guess we are a little bit utopian, but, like, we're also kind of realistic and often a little depressed about the chances of this actually working out. But he's got this, like, sort of almost mindless optimism about the future. I think we could all have a little bit more of that. Sorry, continue, babe.
That's okay. No, I was going to say that what he proposes is very much technologically determined. You know, he has these engineering solutions for technical scientific engineering problems that exist in the world, like global warming, like getting off this planet, you know, like exploring other places and having electric cars and solar power and stuff like that. That actually, that utopia is easier to imagine in a lot of people's minds, given the society we live in, than one where the fundamental social relations of society are changed, and that the power dynamics of society are changed, and that actually there are no more Elon Musks anymore. They will exist as human beings, but they will not have the economic and the political power to dominate us and to dominate our time and our political system. That seems way more utopian to people than like, we'll fly a fucking rocket into the space and then we'll solve global warming with this, that, and the other thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do like thinking about a world where Elon Musk is just broke walking around. That fucking rules. Just a man dreaming of space.
Well, Jamie and I were talking about this when we were watching it, because we were thinking about, like, under socialism or communism, whatever you want to call it, you know, what would be the role of an Elon Musk? And we came to some interesting sort of conclusions about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely has a place in a socialist society. I don't just want to send him to the wall. He clearly is good and talented at, like, engineering and coming up with ideas. You know, he just said, I have so many ideas all the time. And, like, that's good. He shouldn't be in charge of shit. Like, I don't want someone with, like, maybe high intelligence at engineering, but very low, like, social and emotional intelligence about, like, the impacts, the social impacts of the things that he's doing. He should not be in charge. He should not be running society. No one person should be, but especially not him. You know, it should be democratic. But, like, I think there's a place for us to democratically decide after we expropriate his company that he still gets to be, like, a head designer there. And you know what? I think he might be okay with that. So Joe Rogan, like, I gotta give him credit where credit is due. He actually is a pretty good interviewer, and he can kind of see. It takes him like 40 minutes to get Elon Musk to laugh and smile.
And a glass of whiskey.
And a glass of whiskey. But once he figures out how to do that, he like really is good at sort of leading him to become a little more open, a little more emotional. And, you know, he gets him to smoke the joint with him. He does not appear to inhale, but then he maybe gets a little bit high afterwards, so I'm not really sure. He smoked it like a cigar, wouldn't you say, babe?
I'd say so,
he smoked it like a cigar. But at the end, he's talking about how, like, he talks about his Twitter habit and how that can be bad when people say mean things and he gets sucked into fights on Twitter. He talks about how lonely it is. He compares himself to Spider-Man, actually.
He does,
and like really paints himself as this like lonely, tortured genius. And like that's an instance where I think, you know, they say feminism isn't just for women. Like anti-capitalism isn't just for the working class, you know? Maybe this is bad for everyone involved, even the people who are at the top of the pyramid. I mean, fuck them still, but you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think I don't know a lot of people that are rich that actually seem happy, even if they seem like they're trying to force it a lot of the times. But it's, you know, it's like one of those things that's so obvious you never think about it, but like how could that possibly make you existentially okay, you know?
Yeah.
I'm pals with other comics that have, you know, quote unquote made it on some level, and you go over to their house and they're like, I have all this stuff, I still hate everything, you know.
Those comics, they just have to control their own career. But Elon Musk, in this position as a capitalist, has to run entire capitalist enterprises, right? So there's like way more pressure on him than even these comedians, you can imagine, right?
Yeah, just absolutely. Yeah,
departments of people and engineering and personnel and
Twitter.
Stuff like that.
Twitter.
In this neoliberal hell world that we live in, I probably use that phrase a little too much, but like the political power by default accumulates to people with economic power. So like, maybe that's a bad way of deciding who's running society. I don't know.
Yeah, Jake, I want to ask you a quick question. It's not like a gotcha question, right? Let's say you're Elon Musk, right?
Oh, I love it already.
All right, so you're Elon Musk, and you have a particular fear of some sort of singularity situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who would you call immediately?
Oh, if I roll over in bed and I pick up the phone as this moment of panic is gripping me.
Yes.
Dan Harmon, I think, is who I would call.
Oh,
that's
damn.
Who he's friends with.
That's
I'm Elon Musk in this situation.
Yes, you are. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate, you know, how humble that is, you being Elon Musk. But in fact, as we find out on the Joe Rogan show, you, my friend, called President Barack Hussein Obama. Dead ass. Like, it's on the fucking show, dude. Like, I called the president. We actually have a clip about it, right? Like,
I try to convince people to slow down AI, to regulate AI. This was futile. I tried for years.
This seems
nobody
like a
listened.
Scene in a movie
nobody
where
listened.
The robots are going to fucking take over and you're freaking me out. Nobody listened.
Nobody listened.
No one. Are people more inclined to listen today? It seems like an issue that's brought up more often over the last few years than it was maybe 5-10 years ago. It seemed like science fiction.
Maybe they will.
All right, that's
so, a slightly different part than where he talks about meeting Obama.
That's fine. So
I like how Joe Rogan, I listened to a little bit of that interview, and he tends to talk to him and go like, your life is so incredible, you build all these rockets, what's it like to be you? And he didn't ask him that question, like, what's it like to be a man who wakes up and goes like, I'm thinking about artificial intelligence too much, I must call Barack Obama to talk about robots,
right,
with the president.
The thing about, well, okay, there's a few things about this actually, but like this is so heavily dependent on like who you are and how much money you have. Like we were talking about this earlier, like if you were just a regular person saying like I have some fears about artificial intelligence than the robot apocalypse, who fuck, like what are we gonna do, would you get a meeting with the president? Like probably not. And like Sean and I had this experience when we were in New Mexico recently, when we were
we met a guy very similar to Elon Musk. Actually
we were at some hot springs about an hour outside of Santa Fe in the middle of fucking nowhere at night, because we like to do stuff at night. We're night people. And, you know, there were three different ones of increasing temperature, and it was pretty nice for a minute. And then this guy got in the hot springs with us. Or I guess there was one guy already who was just chilling. And then this other guy got in the hot springs with us. And he starts talking very similarly to how Elon Musk and Joe Rogan are talking this podcast about like his like plans for a magnet plane that got stolen by the government and blah, blah, blah. And we were fucking terrified of
terrified.
Him.
Yeah.
They like this guy had stringy hair. He was very, very bizarre. And you have to understand this is the middle of fucking nowhere. Like we're in just like this mountain with this fucking spring. There were some houses around, but, you know, we're way out of our element. And yeah, some random ass like stringy haired, skinny, psychopathic potentially dude telling you about the magnet planes and like how he has to get in touch with the president in order to like explain to him how he's going to solve society. You know, we literally, because we were also like naked and it was really cold out and they could have stabbed us or done whatever they wanted to us at any time, we're like freaked out enough that we kind of like packed up our shit and left. But you know, maybe that weird guy in the hot tub in New Mexico, the spring hot tub, maybe he had just as good ideas as Elon Musk, but he just couldn't get in touch with the president.
Maybe. The older I get, the more I tend to think that maybe the tinfoil hat guy is just somebody who just maybe something really specific went wrong or we're not seeing this the right way. Because like when I go back to Texas and I talk about shit that we're having a perfectly reasonable adult conversation about right now, people look at this as tinfoil hat shit. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're going to abolish police.
Right.
Oh, well, you don't think private property should, you know, I went and did the Comedy Cellars radio show on Sirius a while back and they tried to present me as if I was a tinfoil hat guy.
Get out of here. Really?
Yeah.
Because you're a socialist.
Yeah,
wow.
They're a bunch of old conservative fuckers, and like, you know, perspective really, really puts us in weird positions against each other or whatever. But that tinfoil hat thing is like almost a tool. Although I say that when I meet the guy in the subway that's like, I just need one more monkey wrench. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. Well, put on the tinfoil hat. Everything will be okay.
Well, the end of the story is we went back to Albuquerque to where our friend lives and we were staying at his house. And he's like, oh, that's a totally normal thing for people to talk about here. Like, don't even worry about it.
Yeah, the Southwest, the people are a little freaky.
Strange. It's
but
strange.
It makes you think maybe... I'm not saying that this guy isn't completely insane, but with me and Jamie's experience, he could have been as brilliant as Elon Musk. He just didn't invest in PayPal when it first came up, and he didn't have billions of dollars to like.
Yeah, or
waste
like
on
a dad with an emerald mine to steal like fucking blood diamonds from
sure.
to like start his
if
new
circumstances
life in America.
Were different, he could have been, you know. That,
yeah,
that
and
maybe.
I mean,
shout
know,
out to that guy.
Yeah, shout out to weird random guy who didn't kill us.
Really nice of you.
Yeah.
You read about like neurotypical, like that's that whole concept, the concept of neurotypicality or whatever, and like it, you don't. To, I guess to reverse this whole thought experiment, what if Elon Musk didn't have any money?
Right.
He'd be the guy wandering up to you in the fucking. You know,
yeah.
Wilderness.
I think so, yeah.
Talking
I think,
about space and shit.
I think that's exactly it, because...
He's not un-off-putting, let's just say that.
Yeah. Social skills he has, he probably developed, because he's got the time and resources to do so.
He didn't develop that many of them,
that's
I have
true.
To say, with all this time and resources. That's one takeaway Jamie and I got from it, too.
One more thing about Elon Musk, because we must move on. I'm very sad, but we'll do another one of these. Back to the AI thing. Right? You played the clip. He's so scared of the robot apocalypse happening and that's his vision of the end of the world. And he goes through phases of being scared about it, but then he's like fatalistic about it.
It was futile.
If you can't beat him, join him. Like, the biggest threat to him, in his opinion, is AI. The biggest threat to him, in our opinion, is us. And the biggest threat to us is him.
Right.
So, like, either he's just totally blind.
It's like rock,
to, like,
paper, scissors.
Yeah. To, like, what's going on in the political world. Or perhaps he's projecting his fear of global proletarian revolution onto the robots. What do you think?
Whoa. I like that, Dr. Freud. That's cool.
I mean, you never know. I could be wrong, but he was tweeting about socialism and stuff, so he's at least like vaguely aware, you know.
But I think the point does still stand, though, that like even for a guy like Elon Musk, to kind of even describe the fears that he has, or for those fears to arise, they have to be some sort of technological singularity of AI coming and deciding that human beings are no longer, you know, worth keeping around because we're like dirty, you know, body machines or whatever. Just get rid of them. He doesn't understand structurally what the social relationships are. And his only fear could possibly be these sentient robots to come kill us. It could never be actually like, I don't know, the billions of people who would be way better off if we were to expropriate him and put him back to not even work, but like let him play all his fun games in like a completely communized society. You know, you could be a great engineer and fly off into space and stuff like that. So I do really think that he and a lot of other capitalists, maybe he in particular, lacks a certain vision of what the social and power dynamics are under capitalism. So it makes sense that his fears are of like this disembodied fucking artificial intelligence out there.
You also, know? Like
that's a very good point, because if he understood the structure, then he would probably, like, if he understood what we're talking about, he'd probably agree with us about what we're talking about on some level.
I think that's when he was saying on Twitter that he was a socialist, that might have been kind of what he was getting at, but he doesn't have the words
Let me rephrase that, actually. If he understood, like, the power structure of capitalism and why he's on the top, he would either agree with us, or he would be more deliberately evil instead of a dumb guy who's just, how did I get this job?
Because he does horribly exploit the Tesla workers, but I don't think that enters into his sort of vision that paying people like $12 an hour to work in a hot tent, you know, making cars for fucking like 18 hours a day, that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that he's trying to help humanity out, you know, by creating this electric car.
Via the model
car
that we currently have.
Yeah, right. I would propose that he's, like, kind of a dumb guy, whereas, like, Jeff Bezos is an evil guy.
That's fair. That's fair. And I think that Joe Rogan, actually, with like Jamie said, has this high emotional intelligence, where and he's very little knowledge of the world. Whereas watching him interact with Elon Musk was fascinating, because he's like the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. Elon Musk like takes, he's very difficult, you know, to get emotions or ideas across, and you know, to us, you know, mere mortals. Whereas Joe Rogan's like, dude, you want to smoke some fucking weed, man?
Yeah,
you expand your mind in my isolation tank.
That's why we need a world where everybody is able to participate, from each according to his abilities, to each according to his needs. And if you are listening to this right now, Elon Musk, join us. You can be our comrade. We won't make fun of you anymore. We'll be very fair. And I think maybe you'll like what we have to say. So...